Hello, everybody, and welcome to Play Ball with Dan Hirschberg. That's me, and it's that time of year. We're getting ready for spring training, so it's a great time to talk about baseball. And joining me now is, I'm very excited to say, is Mr. Dennis Holmberg, who was in baseball for some 50 years, professional baseball, variety of roles as a player, as a coach, as a manager. Very successful minor league manager, I might add. Thanks for coming on.
Dan, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. So, for starters, just give us a little background on yourself. Where are you from? And I know you live in the Dunedin area now, and you've been there a long time.
Well, just going back a number of years, born in Fremont, Nebraska, right outside of Omaha. My father was in the service, so after being born and him having to go over to Korea, I was a military brat of sorts. So from Nebraska to Washington to Arizona to Florida to Alabama, you know, about 10, 12 years of that, and settled down in Columbus, Georgia when he retired at Fort Benning. So Georgia's still a little bit of my home, but after I joined the Blue Jay organization, Dunedin's become my home.
Wonderful. And let me ask you this. So you were a variety of roles, like I said. You were a minor league manager for many years, racked up 1,560 wins, a winning percentage of 523, which is really amazing. What would you say was your success? How did you go about being a minor league manager and be so successful?
Well, I think toward the end of my minor league playing career with the Milwaukee Brewers, who I signed and played with for 7 to 8 years, I think you start to see the handwriting on the wall, and a lot of people would tell you the same story. And you look to maybe have a chance or an opportunity to go into coaching or managing, and I was fortunate enough to have guys in the Brewers organization like Al Widmeyer and Tony Siegel, that they offered me a job to manage after my 7th or 8th year of playing. And it's always a tough decision. Any player will say, you know what, I'm just a year away. Maybe I'm 2 years away. Maybe I'm 5 years away. But you have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And coaching, I think, was a big part of my feelings and the way I wanted to move forward. And so I dove into the managing ranks and played a half a year in the Eastern League, and then they sent me to Newark, New York in 1977 to manage in the New York Penn League. Mm-hmm. First year as a manager.
Yeah, yeah. And and you were drafted, though, by the Brewers, correct? You played with the Brewers already?
No, it's a funny story. I was drafted by Montreal out of high school, and I didn't sign.
Oh.
And I went to junior college, and they had the January draft back in those days.
Yep.
And I got redrafted in January by the Seattle Pilots. I'm throwing some dark age baseball names out here. And I didn't sign in January. I played my first year in junior college. And the scout, Jack Sanford, came back to see me play, you know, a number of times. And I think you know, if the scout sees you once really, really good, and he can see you bad, and it just leaves those impressions.
Sure.
But we played a doubleheader, I believe, against Brunswick Junior College, and I probably went 7 for 9 with 2 doubles, a triple, and 3 home runs and drove in like 10, 12 runs. And it was just the best career game I could ever have, and he happened to be there. But I waited till June, and they came back, made another offer, and at that time I signed with the Brewers.
So
that, well, actually, Seattle had moved by January. They had moved and transitioned to Milwaukee in 1970. So I went from the Brewers to the Pilots. I mean, excuse me, from the Seattle Pilots, Montreal Expos to the Seattle Pilots to the Milwaukee Brewers, and about a year later, the United States Army. I was drafted in that, too, for 7 years.
Oh, really? You were in the Army for 7 years?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because when I was looking at my notes here, I'm like, gee, what happened? There seemed to be a time in there where something was missing, and I guess that's it.
No, there's no time missing. At that time, when players were drafted and signed, if they felt you were a prospect of some sort, they would get you into the Army Reserve National Guard.
Ah, okay.
The Vietnam War was coming to a little bit of a boil in 1970, 71, 72, and nobody knew which direction it was going to head. So me and two other guys, they got us into the Glendale, Arizona National Guard. I went to Fort Pope, Louisiana for basic. I don't recommend anybody ever going there. And I went to Fort Sam Houston, and I went through as a medic. And then I was in for about 7 years. You had two-week summer camps and weekends. So I was playing ball weekends. 2 weeks I had to take off and go someplace. It was all constant flow.
Gotcha. So you were drafted twice before you were drafted.
Three times, including the Army.
Right. the pilots and the expos, was there a reason you decided at that time, you know, I'm not signing? Was it money? Was it,
you know,
what was it?
I think anybody out of high school, unless you're just a really exceptional, looking back from a managerial or player development viewpoint, I mean, you have to be multi-talented and have two or three outstanding tools. And college was still out there to go and play. It's kind of funny, back in those years, you could go to a junior college and you could be drafted out of high school, you could be drafted in January, you could be drafted in June, you could be drafted again in January, you could be drafted again in June, you could be drafted five times in 2 years before you pick and choose the organization you want to sign with. And that all kind of changed after a while, but I just felt I wasn't ready out of high school, but I did feel a year later I was ready to go play. And the money was a little different too. Coming out of high school and coming into out of junior college, the offer was a little bit better to play. But I felt I was a little bit more mature, you know, a little bit more physically prepared to play.
Yeah, well, you know what, that takes shows maturity, really, that you realize that, you know what, let's not rush into this.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. That's pretty cool. So, you know, I know you did some time in the major leagues as a coach, but let's talk about the minor league stuff. Is that what you enjoyed more, working with those young people, or what, as opposed to being a coach on a major league team?
Well, there's not anybody that's coaching or managing or a pitching coach, hitting coach, would not like to spend, you know, 5 to 7, 7 to 10 years in the big leagues or more. But I just somehow felt that my niche was being carved out as a minor league development type of person. And maybe Toronto recognized that, gave me the opportunity at different levels. And I always felt a need or a sense of urgency of some sort to help the players get through and transition from one level and then go to the next level. And I always thought to myself that what I needed to do was not only prepare them to play this current year, but also to prepare them for next year when they go from low A to high A or from A ball to double A. Same game, same fundamentals, but things that you have to be able, and the game speeds up at different levels, but the expectations of what to expect, not only currently, but the next year.
Well, I got to say, just the way you're talking now, I could see you talking to young guys and just leading them in the right way and getting them to think a certain way. You know, and I'm sure the challenge is, you know, every kid is different. I mean, you know, so the message might be a little different from one to the next.
You know, I tell the story just briefly. My first year managing, I was 25 years old, and great opportunity, New York Penn League. Started the season, I got a bottle of champagne, put it on ice for the first win. Started the season, we were 0-1, 0-2, 0-3, and 0-4. And then we went 0-5. Then we went 0-6, and I said, I started thinking about the decision that I made to go into managing. And we got rained out. You never wish for rainouts unless, you know, you're not playing well or you've got some guys that are hurt, so you need a day or two off. But we got rained out against Utica, which was a farm club of the Toronto Blue Jays. And little did I know that, you know, a year later I'd be managing or coaching in the organization. But we got rained out against Utica. Doubleheader the next night, we lost the first game and we were 0-8. I said, this cannot go on. But we won the second game. We were 1-8 to start the season, but we went on to go 43-29. And I always remembered that and always pushed that. I know it's a cliche of it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Stay the course. Do what you need to do. Execute the fundamentals. Play hard. Hustle day in, day out. and just be better than you were yesterday. And that's, but I remember that I tell that to a lot of coaches in the years past, you know, and it's a cliche. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. So, but it's true. It's very true.
Mm-hmm. What year was that?
1977. Our first round draft pick that year was a guy named Paul Molitor.
But
he didn't come to the New York Penn League. He went straight to the Midwest League.
Uh-huh.
But our second round pick was a kid named Kevin Bass.
Wow.
High school kid out of Menlo Park. I had two kids off that club that went on to play in the big leagues. And Kevin was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And David LaPointe, a left-handed pitcher from upstate New York, was a second player. But it was a fun year. It was a fun year. It ended a whole lot better than it started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was another year, if I remember correctly, in our conversation a while back. Was it 2003 with Auburn? The team started a little bit slow, and then you kind of talked about the fish tank.
Yeah.
Tell us about that story.
Well, I talked to the front office, the general manager. I think it was Jason Smorrell at the time, and he's the GM in Syracuse right now with the Mets. And I said, listen, is there any chance of getting a fish tank in here? Because this is what I want to do. I don't want a 10-gallon. I don't want a 20, 25. I want a 50-gallon fish tank. Can you make that happen? And after every win, we're going to put a fish in the fish tank. And I know it sounds funny and stupid, but it's just something to kind of hang on to. And 56 wins later, we had 56 fish. Now, some fish made it, some fish didn't. But it was nice to see the treasure chest opening up with bubbles coming up, and they stuck my bobblehead down in there, too. That was Pirates of the Caribbean. But, no, that was a fun year. And as a matter of fact, we were only three wins away from the Yankees record, Oneonta Yankees, with 59 wins. So it's always fun to win, but, you know, you appreciate and you understand, and I think you develop more players when you're winning than when you're losing.
Sure. Sure. You were the bullpen coach for the big team in 94-95. Did you enjoy that? I know you felt that maybe your niche was more of the minor league managing that, but did you enjoy the coaching for those couple years?
No question. You know, I'd already coached and managed maybe 10, 15 years in the organization, 15, 18 years, and I remember the day I got a phone call from Gordash and Cito Gaston, and they called me off the field, and they offered me the job, the position, to replace John Sullivan, who was retiring at the time as the bullpen coach, and didn't hesitate. I just had to juggle some family things that were going on with some things that was happening personally in my life with my wife's accident that she had in 1985. Two young kids, a 5-6-year-old daughter and a 4-5-year-old son. But we made it work.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, 94 was a strike year, and that shut down everything thereafter. And then 95 was a little bit of a slow start to the season. And if I remember correctly, the umpires went on strike the first week or two of the start of the season. I'm saying, gee, many Christmas. Come on, let's all get along and play.
Yep.
But 94 was the first time playoffs in a World Series that had been canceled in many, many, many years, if not, matter of fact, first time ever.
Yeah. Pat Gillick, I know you had a lot of good things to say about him.
Who doesn't have good things to say about Pat Gillick? Pat was just a tremendous human being, not only being a great baseball mind, but he was, I think, personally attached to a lot of people, which is a sign of a good leader, you know,
mm-hmm.
Knowing everybody's background, knowing everybody's heartbeat. And I have nothing to say but the utmost 101% applause and appreciations for Pat Gillick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear a lot of good things about him. So in your managing career, you coached, managed a lot of guys that really had great careers: Noel Syndergaard, Kevin Millar, Carlos Delgado.
Not Millar, Pillar.
Yes, okay, yes. And
I take Pillar over Millar.
Okay, there you go.
I'm a poet and don't know it.
I've been corrected, all right. So were there any guys that came up that actually ended up surprising you, how good they were?
Well, first of all, you know, with Tim Wilkin as a scouting director, I had to handle a lot of the guys that he got on board with myself and other managers in the organization. There's always surprises. There's mm-hmm. always there's guys that can't miss and they miss, mm-hmm. and there's guys that you know you didn't think they surprise you. Pilar was a perfect example. I mean, he was a 32nd round draft pick out of Northern California, and he came in and had a solid year. Matter of fact, he won the Appalachian League batting title on the last at bat of the last game of the season. He was just a go-getter. But a lot of players have to go. This is why you have the minor leagues. You got to go one level to the next level, conquer that level, get to the next level, conquer that level, and then put yourself on the radar and mm-hmm. Get noticed and recognized, and hopefully get an opportunity and a chance. And that's what Kevin did. But he did everything that was expected of him to do at every level, and not only was it hitting, his defense, his love for the game, and just a terrific individual, a perfect story.
Yeah, real quick, these days you're also doing some radio work. I assume this year you're going to do it again, I hope. Great experience for you, I assume?
Yeah, Eli down at Fishman down at the stadium in Shelby, they asked me to what I consider coming out and doing like color broadcasting. I said, well, sure, I'll give it a shot. I had done it one other time in Bluefield, and it was interesting. I'll tell you what, those you guys that are behind these mics and these radio broadcasters and TV commentaries, they do their homework. You got an iPad here, you got a computer here, you got a TV screen here, you got the Jumbotron out in front of you, and there's a lot of action going on. You've got all the interviews that you've done and prep for the game that night. So hats off to all of those guys.
Well, hats off to you for a great career, radio work. This has been Play Ball with Dan Hirschberg. Thanks so much for joining us. If you want to reach me, I'm at DonnieBaseball56@yahoo.com. My Facebook page is DannyBaseball56. Thanks. See you next time.